Welcome back here to X's and Bros on the Michigan Sports Network. Danica Halen, Ryan Elke, Anthony Bellino, all joining you. Joining us now on the Meyer Supercenter guest line, he covers the Big Ten and Ohio State extensively. My good friend, Jeremy Birmingham. You can find him on Twitter at Berm, writing for Letterman Row. And Jeremy, my friend, as always, we've been doing this for a lot of years. How are you, man? How's life? How are things?
I don't ever complain because no one listens, but life is fine. Life is good. It's great to be back covering games in person and with crowds, and excited to get to keep doing that throughout this fall.
You know, Jeremy, let's talk about crowds here. What was the state of the crowd? You know, I was watching the game on television, but you can never truly digest the actual atmosphere itself until you are there and you see kind of what happens. When that score went final with the Oregon Ducks knocking out Ohio State in the shoe of all places, was the wind sucked out of the sails? What was the atmosphere like after?
I mean, it wasn't as bad as you'd think. I mean, honestly, Ohio State fans are pretty ruthless at times. They obviously have an expectation that the Buckeyes can't ever lose a game. I've been, watching Ohio State football for 35, 36 years, and every single loss sort of feels like the end of the world. But honestly, it wasn't as bad as I thought, and I think that is because the last 18 months or so has provided some perspective for people. There was a lot of cheering when the Buckeyes were running off the field. There were fans that were still leaning over the railing trying to get high fives. And I remember very specifically as they were walking off the field at the end there, CJ Stroud was walking off the field with Chris Olave. And there was a handful of groups of fans still trying to get their attention. And just one voice was yelling extremely loud at CJ Stroud, like, "Hey, we've got your back. We believe in you. Don't let this, ruin everything." Like, I talked to CJ on Wednesday night at the Ohio State practice, and he said that he remembered that, and he said it was something that he really liked, and that it was something he was, proud to see happen. So, it wasn't as bad as you'd think, obviously, all things considered, but clearly, it's a fan base that's not used to losing games very often.
No, and I made a mockery of it on Monday. I did. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to be honest with you. I did. I asked the question of how Ohio State fans would survive now that their season is over in week two, Jeremy. See, I'm built a little bit differently. I'm ready to handle disappointment and defeat, but my friends to the south of the border, they not so much. I guess my question to this would be, how does this affect what the college football playoff outlook looks like now through 2 weeks that Ohio State has a loss? How do you think that affects the committee and how they view the Big Ten as a whole because Ohio State has carried the torch for so long?
I mean, I think Ohio State in a lot of ways is sort of recession proof, and I think that people can look at it objectively. It is a good Oregon team. They are going to be most likely a top five or top 16 most of the year, and especially once they get back to Thibodeau and Justin Fields, they're going to get even better. I don't think anyone's overreacting to it, but I also think, Anthony, that we're in this weird year where, and you can tell me if you think differently, but in my mind, I think it's pretty much everyone sucks except for Bama. So, there's going to be chaos this year, and if Ohio State wins out, they're going to be in the playoff. And I don't think we should read too much into one loss by 7 points against a top five team. Obviously, there's reason for concern with the Ohio State defense, and anybody objectively can see that. But I don't think that from a playoff perspective or a big picture perspective, as long as they get better and write things out, this offense at Ohio State is going to score 40 some points a game. It's going to be hard for anyone else to beat them if the offense is not stopping themselves like they did on Saturday with 5 fourth down conversion attempts and not taking field goals when they had points they could have got, a couple drop touchdown passes. I mean, there's little things that got in the way, but big picture, I don't think it really matters that much if they win out, because if they win out, they'll still be in the playoff.
You know, it's very interesting. You talked about the offense, and if you score 4 or 5 touchdowns in a game, you should win, right? My magic number in the professional football It used to be right around 21, and that might change a little bit. Maybe it floats a little bit higher, but you know, if you're scoring that many points, you should be able to win a football game. In college, I just think with the offenses the way that they are, and the fact that usually there's a talent disparity, you might have to put up a few more points to be able to overcompensate for one side of the football. Defensively, Ohio State looks like they are beatable, and I don't know. I mean, obviously, they're probably going to get better throughout the course of the year, but if you're a team like a Penn State or a team like Iowa, Michigan State, Michigan, you almost have to look at that game that Oregon had like, hey, here's a blueprint for us. Are we going to be able to replicate it to knock them off?
Yeah, I don't even think it's just the Oregon game. The Minnesota game provided that as well. Ohio State does not have the interior defensive line play that they normally do. Right now, they're missing Jerron Tate, who's one of the presumptive starter alongside Haskell Garrett. Teron Vincent's played fine. But the real thing is you lose your four best linebackers, guys that played literally every snap for the last 3 years. And the Buckeyes are trying to figure out who the next wave of guys at that spot is. And so far, Tommy Eichenberg and Taraja Mitchell and Cody Simon, no one's really just grabbed that job and taken it. And we've seen in 2 weeks that teams are running the ball up the middle against Ohio State, and that just simply does not happen to the Buckeyes. And so whatever the fix is going to be, needs to happen relatively quickly. The Buckeyes are in a nice position schedule-wise right now where they got those two tough ones out of the way at Minnesota and against Oregon. Now you get a chance against Tulsa and Akron to kind of figure out exactly what you're doing. I do expect them to get better. I do expect that you will see Penn State in Michigan. And then if the Buckeyes end up in the Big Ten championship game against Wisconsin or in Iowa, those teams are going to try to just keep the ball away from the Buckeye offense. And there does appear to be a blueprint for that by just running the ball straight at them. So that doesn't happen often, but you better be careful because if you put the Buckeye offense on the field, Saturday is sort of a misnomer. They had 615 yards of offense and scored 28 points. That's a normal day. You're going to have 49 points or so in that setting. And the Buckeyes offense is going to be able to outscore anyone they play. So you've got to keep the ball away from them. That blueprint certainly does appear to be there.
He is Jeremy Birmingham. You can find him on Twitter at Berman. I mentioned Iowa there in the assumption that this team might be able to keep some things up because they're not on the season schedule for the Ohio State Buckeyes, nor is Wisconsin. So they get Nebraska and Purdue, a little cross division matchups there. But the reason I bring up Iowa is because I feel like everybody's very high on the Iowa Hawkeyes. They moved up five spots to number five in the country, according to the AP Top 25. Berm, I think that's too high. Look, I know that they got Iowa State 27-17 and the Clones and our guy Matt Campbell, they're beating themselves up over there because they can't beat Iowa. But this is an Iowa team that passed the ball 11 of 21 for 106 yards under Spencer Petras. 67 yards on the ground. That's it for Iowa, 67 net yards. Iowa State threw three interceptions with Brock Purdy there. Like, Iowa's defense might have played Iowa State's offense well, but I don't think Iowa has the offensive firepower or the game plan to be able to get it done. I think that ranking them at number five in the country is, you know, seriously overrating them.
You know, I would be really okay with rankings not coming out until November, with the college football playoff rankings. I just think at this point there's so many missing data points that it's really just put out there to get people talking and to have the speculation. But for me, I mean, I was a good team. I liken them to someone like what we used to do with Gonzaga and basketball. And every couple of years they'd have so many like 50-year seniors and way older dudes that they're playing against that it becomes sort of an unfair fight in a way because they're so much bigger physically and so much stronger that they're playing against teams like Ohio State, obviously as an example, where you are constantly turning over the roster with the NFL's early departures and that kind of stuff. I think you're playing a bunch of 18, 19-year-olds against a bunch of 23-year-olds. There's going to be a physical advantage for that Iowa group in most cases. So I do think that they're probably a little overhyped. I don't buy that offense as you don't. But the defense is good. And again, every couple of years, Kirk Ferentz seems to have a group that is just physically bigger and stronger than the teams they're playing against because so many teams in the Big Ten are losing players early, and Iowa just doesn't seem to.
Wisconsin is a team right now ranked 18th in the country. They lost their opener against Penn State 16-10, then rebounded against Eastern Michigan 34-7. And I think one of the biggest conversations or questions that we had after week one is when we watched the Georgia-Clemson game, a low-scoring affair, I believe 10-7 off the top of my head. And then you watched the Penn State-Wisconsin game 16-10. When it came to the Big Ten, it was like, oh, these offenses aren't any good. But when we watched the Georgia game, it's like, holy mackerel, would you look at the way these defenses are playing? And I'm like, all right. Like, oh, there's two sides every story, and then there's like there are two sides every coin, and then there's like the edge, which counts, I guess, as a third side. I kind of feel like we should be somewhere in the middle on both of these. Like Wisconsin and Penn State could still have good defensive games while having poor offensive outputs in that contest, just like the Georgia game could have in week one.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, I would take Wisconsin's wide receiver core and Penn State's wide receiver core over what Georgia has out there right now. I mean, that may change in a few weeks if Georgia ever gets anyone healthy. But I think that the real difference, honestly, is just the way the perception is. Again, that Penn State and Wisconsin game was sloppy at times. I mean, Wisconsin had three trips inside of the 20-yard line that they left with no points, a blocked field goal and two turnovers. Penn State, I like Sean Clifford. I like what he brings to the table. I think he's another one of these guys where he's played a lot of football over the last couple of years. And so that's where the Big Ten may be a little bit different this year because of the fact that you have teams like Minnesota and Illinois. Illinois has 40 seniors on their team. I mean, with the super seniors and everything else, with COVID, all these guys getting the extra year, like there's a great disparity in experience between some of these teams. And then, like I said, the teams like Ohio State, Georgia, Clemson, these teams that are losing a lot of guys early in the NFL, they're very young and inexperienced. And I think that is going to play a part in how this early on.
Yeah, experience counts, man. The elder statesman being able to have an edge and an advantage. Michigan checks into the top 25 at 2-0. They handled business against Western Michigan, who, you know, Twitter wanted to continuously remind me who the opponent was. And I'm like, look, that throw by McCarthy is incredible. It doesn't matter who he's playing against. Like, those are scholarship athletes out there. They're way better than anybody commenting on Twitter. I can almost guarantee you that. McCarthy ran 100 yards to throw the ball 600 yards for a 69-yard touchdown. Like, it was simply incredible. But I also understand that it is Western. Then they get Washington, which was supposed to be a top 25 team preseason. We know that that's not what Washington is. They don't belong there. They did show some glimpses, though, late in that game that made me a little bit concerned. But what concerns me more is that in Jim Harbaugh was pretty outspoken about, hey, we, you know, some get it done in the air, some get it done on the ground. We chose to go on the ground. Mission accomplished. I love the quote, Neil Armstrong and, you know, George Patton. I thought it was creative. It's funny. But it doesn't make me feel any less concerned about the Michigan pass game. How concerned, you know, would you say, what should that level of concern be for Michigan fans, knowing that their quarterback just threw the ball for 44 yards in a football game in the year of 2021?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's not ideal. There are good receivers. I know you lose Ronnie Bell for the year, but Michigan has talent on the outside, and you just got to find a way to get the ball down the field, because that sort of run, that run game isn't going to work the same way against Penn State or Wisconsin. It's not going to work the same way against Michigan State, who's playing extremely tough football. I mean, you're gonna need to be able to be multidimensional, and that is football still. It doesn't really change. All the games change, the styles change, but at the end of the day, you have to be able to do multiple things, because once you get one-dimensional on offense, it becomes very easy for teams to figure you out. And Cade McNamara clearly won that job. I don't know that he's the dynamic type of kid who can make plays to beat you the way that I think J.J. McCarthy will be in the road. So I think clearly Jim Harbaugh wants to stick with the veteran and the kid that maybe takes some of the pressure off of a true freshman. But I think you have to find ways to work J.J. McCarthy into that into the game more often. And I think you'll see that against Northern Illinois this weekend.
Oh, wow. Maybe a little quarterback controversy, according to Berm here.
A little controversy, Berm.
Come on, that's called spin, Berm. That's why I'm spinning this.
Yeah. Let's avoid the controversy. I think you have to, and I said the same thing on Letterman, on Letterman Row on our practice report on Wednesday night. I think Ohio State has to find a way to get Kyle McCord into the game, the backup quarterback. You've got to have these other players ready. When you have a starting quarterback that hasn't played much football, it's not like in the last couple of years where you had Justin Fields, and no matter who was behind him, you couldn't dare play anyone else because Justin Fields was so good. This is a situation where you need to be able to be flexible and adaptable, and and let these other kids get important reps so that in the event something happens, an injury or you know, just a complete breakdown of confidence or whatever, that you have a kid that's ready to go in and make plays.
You know, you brought his name up, and I know this isn't really what we're supposed to be talking about here, but because you brought up Justin Fields, as much as Justin Fields is an Ohio State Buckeye, and the Chicago Bears are a rival of the Detroit Lions, and it would pain a lot of Lions fans to see him have success at Ohio State and then to go to Chicago and have success. The plan right now of them, you know, starting Andy Dalton and sitting Justin Fields, as somebody who has a relationship with Justin Fields, I mean, you watched him play. We talked about this years ago, what the kind of caliber of quarterback that he was going to be. As someone who might have a soft spot for Justin Fields, the human and the football player, not just the football player, are you kind of happy with the way that they're kind of, you know, not just throwing him out there baptism by fire behind an offensive line that really can't be trusted?
You know how good Patrick Mahomes is? You know,
I hear about it a lot. I do.
Patrick Mahomes, he was so fortunate to be able to sit for a year and play alongside Alex Smith and learn from Alex Smith about what it takes to be a professional quarterback. And I know it's fun to mock Andy Dalton, or, you know, he's not a bad quarterback. He's been put in some situations with the Bengals offensive line at the end of his time at Cincinnati, and now with the Bears. I mean, Andy Dalton is going to take a beating this year. And I feel similarly with Justin this year as I did with Joe Burrow a year ago, who I covered when Joe was in high school. I'm a Bengals fan. I didn't want them to draft Joe Burrow because I was afraid they were going to get him hurt, as they did. And I think Justin, obviously, with the way that he can move and the things he can do with his feet, he may be able to make some plays and extend some drives and have some highlight-type stuff, but I don't think it's in his best interest as a quarterback to be out there behind that offensive line and forced to take all the hits and all the losses that the Bears are going to have this year. I think getting him involved and doing some things with him during every game and seeing what he can do is best for him as a player and as a person. Because that confidence, once you go out there in the NFL and everything's on your shoulders and your team goes 2-14, all of a sudden it becomes a lot harder to believe that, hey, I'm as good as this as I think I am.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Last one here for you, Berm. We got about 30 seconds. Is Mel Tucker and Michigan State, are they like the Loch Ness Monster of the Big Ten right now?
I mean, there's something happening there. I don't know what it is. Let's be real. Mel Tucker's a good college football coach, okay? I don't believe that Michigan State has the talent to win the Big Ten, but I know that what I know of Mel Tucker is that he's going to have them physically ready to fight somebody every week, and I think that that's the first step in Michigan State getting back to the heights that Mark D'Antonio had. He's got to be willing to go out there and punch someone in the mouth, knowing that they're going to punch you in the mouth, and Mel Tucker's team will do that.
He is Jeremy Birmingham. Find him on Twitter at Berm. Jeremy, my man, thank you so much for the time, bro. Greatly appreciate, always, our Big Ten conversations.
Anytime, man.